it's a shame that, you know, San Francisco gets everybody hurt. I mean, Philly is awfully, boy, they're physical across the front, particularly defensively. Goodness gracious. But they could, I mean, they could still be playing San Francisco out of quarterbacks. That makes it rather tough, to say the least. Philly kind of ran the ball decently a little bit at times, but.
Pat, I thought they got away after they scored on that first drive with the Devontae Smith catch that shouldn't have been a catch. But anyway, for much of what, late in the first quarter and for a lot of the second quarter, Philly got away from even trying to run the ball. And I'm going, what are you doing? You're not running the ball. Well, they finally started running it again, you know, on that drive before halftime. But
well, Gainwell and, you know, and Sanders and Hurts and those guys. Well, they've got some running ability. Yeah, that's what are they trying to call it? Expedited review, isn't that the term they're using on the on that? Uh-huh. You know, like
you love that, Pat.
I was reading this. Well, it's a. I'm not a fan of video replay. Period. I wish you didn't even have the stuff. But from the standpoint of, I was reading something this morning that I don't understand exactly how they do that, but they need to. Slow down the process a little bit. Obviously, you know, when you have a kid knows the ball hit the ground, and so they give some kind of trigger signal to hurry up and get up there before they have time to review it. They probably need to talk about that particular end of it and perhaps slow it down if they're going to use, again, the expedited review. And if you got the junk, you might as well use it.
That's like in the NBA, they're talking about the foul on LeBron at the end of the game the other night where they say, why are we even having, you know, review if we can't review this or whatever? Well, in that situation, which the expedited is when it's so clear that New York, you know, signals to them in the headset, hey, no, this was clearly a drop or clearly this or that, so they can move on with the game without stopping the game for a long time. But they ought to be able to, an official up there, if he has a question, Pat, I think they should be able to stop the game in that situation.
They probably should now. I think
that's a fourth down play, you know.
Fouls in basketball is like holding in football. They don't even need to – don't mess with the video on that. Either you call it or you don't call it. You don't use video review on that. Now, a drop ball that hits the ground or some of this kind of stuff, if we get to viewing, you know, officiating the entire ball game by video review, then I'm out. You know, I won't watch a game if they get into that clown outfit. But again, I think, Craig, you know, and I saw the deal. Hey, did they call a foul on LeBron? No. So that means it wasn't a foul, right? Now, did he hit his arm? Sure he did. Hell, you don't got to be a brain surgeon to figure that out. But if they didn't call it, it's not a foul. Get up and go play. Matt's right. Matt's
so you're
right.
Good with just deciding the game. So should have been at the line for two foul shots, you're good with just saying because of an incompetent official or three of them.
I'm good with it. Yeah, I'm good. I'm totally good with it. I'm completely good with it. I have no problem
so
with it.
Now, should with, they? Mm-hmm. So do you think they should be able to stop the game in the situation on Devontae Smith, 4th and 3 or whatever it was, and they go deep? If the official in the press box had a question, my question to you is,
slow it down for this incident here. But this is different than trying to call holding or something. You know, this is a different call than holding. Holding is like calling fouls in basketball to me. And leave it alone. Call it and let it go. Go with it. Now, if a ball hits the ground or your foot's on the line or something, then you ought to review it. Now, they probably should, and I think they will, you know, however they slow it down if some. But either New York didn't see it or didn't get off their you-know-what to see it or not, and the rules let them play with it and let them go.
I mean, Philly ran up and got the ball snapped.
Exactly. They did what they're supposed to do. Now, maybe you, New York, should get off their ass and go to look at the thing quicker.
Well, and Pat, you don't know what I said. And again, watching it on TV, we didn't have a clear replay either. Okay,
right.
I'm watching it on TV, and I see Devontae Smith do what he is coached to do immediately, and give
no
the
question.
Sign, say, "Hey, get up on the line, get up on the line."
Exactly.
Look, Pat, I've never coached a day in my life, but if I'm in Kyle Shanahan's spot, I'm throwing the challenge flag right then and there because Devontae Smith knew he didn't catch the ball.
Yeah.
Now, look, that was one play in a game. The Eagles dominated the game.
Oh, yeah.
Probably doesn't make a difference. I'm just saying in that instance, if I'm in Kyle Shanahan's shoes, I'm throwing the flag right there because he's telling you I didn't catch the ball, or at least I don't think I caught the ball. Anyways,
well, if you know,
it was a fourth down play is my point, because the field – because it's either they're in the red zone about to score a touchdown or it's our ball. You know.
Yeah, right. Well, you would think somebody upstairs would have been telling somebody, throw the flag.
That's what I would have thought.
You know, I mean, that's why you have guys up there watching. Now, if you don't have a clear look at it, you don't have a clear look,
Which they didn't run that replay with the clear look up to that point,
They could have played them 10 times without those quarterbacks, and Philly would have beat their brains out every time without those quarterbacks.
Yeah, without the quarterback, San Francisco had no chance. And Philly might have beaten them, with Brock Purdy. I'm just saying it's a shame for a team that had won, 12 in a row to have their season end that way because they ran out of quarterbacks. But
well, I mean, that's part of it, Craig. I mean, that's, that's like, getting a – it'd been a shame if I hadn't got the snap hooks and snap-hooked everything off the drive. You know, I mean, that's part of the game, injury, so whatever.
But for it to happen on the sixth snap of the game and then
– all those kind of things. Yeah, it was a great story with Purdy.
Yeah.
Great story with Purdy.
Yeah.
You know, and then Johnson gets his head banged and he's out of there. And now you're just throwing guys out there and it's complete street ball. But, it is what it is,
from the Eagles is what you're saying.
Eagles have got a they're the real McCoy to me now. They really are. I think they're an awfully, awfully good football team. Very complete football team. They are so doggone physical. Boy, golly.
I mean, look.
Third most rushing touchdowns in NFL history. 32 rushing touchdowns.
Is that what it is?
That was in the regular season.
Third most in NFL
history. They scored four more times on the ground yesterday.
Third most sacks ever. And, Pat, I know how you feel about pass rushers. I mean,
the sack record we talked about the other day, that's the one that just grabbed at me. You know, when you look and they got sacks, and it's the third highest in the history of the league, wasn't it? You know, all that stuff.
Yeah, it was.
My goodness. Yes. So that's for real stuff. You know, that's obviously.
Well, and then on the offensive line, like we talk about the rushing game, and I believe that all pro is more important to me than Pro Bowl because Pro Bowl takes into account fan voting. You know how that goes.
But they
still have three Pro Bowlers on that offensive line, Johnson and the Alabama kid and the other guard. I mean, they're on both sides of the line of scrimmage. They've got guys you want to have, I'm telling you.
Yep, no question.
Good. All right. Pat, let's get to the other game. Mm-hmm. And am I simplifying it too much to say that the key in this one was Mahomes had more time than Burrow because Burrow was under pressure the whole game long. And Mahomes, he wasn't 100%, but he was healthy enough to move around. But he also had a lot of time throughout the day yesterday.
This is going to go down as one of the gutsiest performances we've ever seen out of anybody in a Super Bowl or one of these conference championship games, I think. I mean, obviously he was hurting, and as the game wore on, he was limping more. You could tell the thing was bothering him. And that one shot he threw was the last touchdown he threw down there. I mean, goodness sakes! I mean, for him to be able to do that on one leg, golly, guys, I think that knothead old side cost him the ball game.
Yeah,
in my opinion, Like I say, I'd forgotten that was the Texas kid, and I don't know him. I'd have some questions about how much sense he's got, but you can't be doing that kind of stuff.
And I agree with that, but to back up what you said, Pat, and this is what Craig and I were talking about, you have to give Mahomes credit with a bad ankle to make a play like that to put himself in a position for Osai.
He wasn't limping as he ran toward the sideline. He was motoring as
he ran
toward the sideline.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. He still didn't look, Craig, and he's not a real fast guy anyway. He still looked a bit slower to me than he does when he's at his best.
But on that play, he was hustling his ass off.
He's trying. He was trying. It didn't make any difference whether that thing was hurt or not. Then the kid goes and hits him out of bounds. I mean,
all the first down gave him was a chance with 8 seconds to go with no timeouts.
Right.
And you got to get another 9 or 10 yards at least.
Yeah, that would have been hold on to your head in that regard. You know, when you tie that thing up, even with, to me, that doggone Burrow, he can flat throw a football, obviously. You know, and he's got some guys that can do some things with it and all. And, you know, if they don't make that call, there's no sense he could have won that ball game. Cincinnati could have won that game.
We were saying Burrow. I mean, the fourth down throw he made to Chase, which that was a fourth and six. Fourth and six, Pat.
Yes,
and he throws it deep. And it was almost like a back shoulder throw in the middle of the field to a guy that's double covered, but just trusted Chase to go up and get it. And P. Ryan scores. But we were saying for Burrow, and he was under pressure, sacked five times.
Sure.
The pass he threw to Hayden Hurst to the tight end in left corner of the end zone, Pat.
Thank you.
How about the one that hit Chase in the head on the deep ball?
Oh my gosh! But, yes, I mean this guy can. This guy's one of the, is going to be, if he stays healthy, one of the iconic passers in the history of the game. I mean, he's going to fit in there with Elway and Aikman and that crowd. I mean, this guy can really throw the ball. So if that knothead hadn't hit Mahomes out of bounds over there, there's no telling.
It's probably
there's
going
no
over time. Probably. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. They had one more play.
Yeah.
But no
right.
timeouts. It would have been tough. Yeah.
Yep. So anyhow, but no, this thing sets up. Real good, you know. That's goodness sakes.
Well, it's a 2-1 seeds, like, and there's so many good stories in this thing. You know,
it looks like Philly is a little bit more complete to me.
I agree.
Than the Kansas City across, you know, given the, you know, golly, I mean, they are so doggone physical in everything they do. Now again, you can't count out, of course, you got Kelce against Kelce in this game, don't you?
That's a storyline. I want to see
Andy Reid against his old team.
Exactly.
You've got two Texas high school quarterbacks going against each other in this thing.
First time two African American quarterbacks.
And for that matter, it's the 2-1 seeds. I mean, it was the best team in each conference throughout the entire season. So
and Dominican Sue's now playing with his third team in the third different team in the Super Bowl.
You're right.
Well, you know, Lane Johnson is a complete stud. Did you read his remarks?
He's a warrior, man.
Well, he was saying that the way I interpret it is seeing his teammates over there and how much and crying and tears in their eyes and the happiness and, you know, the fulfillment and everything else, just to, he was calling them, you know, being with my boys and all that. But, he, you know, again, the way I interpret him, him being with his guys and being through this means literally everything.
Because
well,
he's playing banged up. I mean,
he
could have easily had season-ending surgery if he had chosen to do
Thank you. And he for the reasons he's talking about. I mean, he wasn't talking about rings. He wasn't talking about playoff money. He wasn't talking about incentives.
Yeah,
it was just the guys around him and what they've been through and what they go through. And you know, particularly those groups, those offensive linemen are normally about probably the most close-knit bunch out there. But, you know, this guy's a pure stud now. He really
is. And one of the better players on you know, one of the better offensive linemen in the league, you know.
Yep.
And you got the Chiefs headed to the third Super Bowl in four seasons. Of course, they beat San Francisco back in 2020, then lost to Tampa Bay the following year. But the Chiefs are back. I said to Matt earlier, Pat, how can you not like Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Andy? Yep. They're all so likable.
Well, and two, you know, in this, the way the NFL is with the salary cap, the common draft, the way it's set up to go. I mean, this is probably not a total dynasty, but this is about as close as you can get in this day and time. You know, with the way the rule,
the underdog.
But you know, just to get in position to do that with the, it speaks well for the Hunts and the personnel people and everybody involved in the Kansas City deal.
You're right, and to Mahomes' credit, he was losing. I mean, they lost Legarius Sneed, the cornerback, and Willie Gay on the defensive side of the ball. But they lost Tony, they lost Mecole Hardman, they lost Juju during the game.
Yeah,
and he kept it rolling. So yeah, give Kansas City all the credit in the world. Yeah,
it was a hell of a ball game. Now,
although
it really was.
I just hated to see it end on a dumb play like that, Pat. You know.
Well, you really do. But I mean, you know, dumb factors into this stuff too. Now, it does.
Right. No, you got to be smarter. Like Osai's going. I was just in full chase mode.
Oh, that made no sense.
Because I was trying to push him, maybe get him going backwards, because I knew he was going for that sideline. I was trying to make him go backwards, get that clock running.
Well. I mean, that's the interesting thing about this sport, about this particular sport. You got to be able, if you're any good, you got to be able to play in a rage, but you can't be an unchained wild man.
No.
You can't be. You can't just go out there and hit after the whistle or get personal fouls or things like that. Now, you got to play between the whistles. You got to play like a demon, you know. Now, this kind of stuff here, thank you, Osai, you probably cost your club a Super Bowl. Nice job,
sir. Pat, as you tell us, special teams, Sky Moore, yeah, 29 yards on that punt return, might have been the play of the game.
You said, I heard you say that, Craig. I think you're exactly right. That, if it's just a, you know, Norman, I don't know whether they were trying to punt the ball in a corner or, you know, you don't know how he hit the ball or any kind of other thing. Oh, I know. Well, he might not have been capable of putting it someplace else, Craig. You don't know.
Yeah, maybe not.
You know, you don't know. But on the same hand,
10 yards shorter, you're still.
Well, you got, cover it and somebody make a tackle. You know, that's why you got guys covering kicks. You know, oh, they'll watch that and get sick. Somebody who gets has already gotten sick about that by this time this morning, probably. Great in that special teams film.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Frank Gantz kind of made his name actually later on as the special teams guru. You know, he was a Navy. He played at the Naval Academy. Bounce, it was Oklahoma State for Jim Stanley in 73 and then went to Army as the offensive coordinator, came back to Oklahoma State in 75. That's when I remember him because we were to Arkansas at the time. I remember him and everything. And then he's 49ers, Bengals, again, Chiefs as a special teams, Philly, Kansas City again. Then he takes over after Makovic takes over 87-88. Now they commenced to go 4-11 both years, so that deal didn't last. And then here comes Schottenheimer, Frank Gantz, and Frank passed away at 70, and he'd been a little bit of everywhere one time. After Kansas City, again Detroit, Atlanta, St. Louis Rams, Jaguars, then came back. I'd forgotten about this, Craig. Later came back and did a special teams deal at SMU in 08. Frank been a little bit of every place. Interesting guy. Frank Gantz, good job. Nice job.
Frank Gantz passed away back in 2009 at the age of 70, like Pat said. Another guy who has passed away, and we just got news of this morning, Pat.
Wow.
The Hall of Famer hockey player Bobby Hull, 12-time All-Star, 2-time Hart Trophy winner, dead at the age of 84. The Golden Jet has passed away, Pat.
Well, I never have kept up with hockey and didn't grow up around it. But if you ask me to name off some names, that'd probably be the first one. Without knowing anything as far as just a recognizable name. Somebody was a really, really iconic player. Bobby Hull. Wow.
Paired with Stan Mikita with the Blackhawks to win the Stanley Cup back in 1961. They had a 23-year title drought. Before that, but yeah, what I remember, Bobby Hull, he was just such an athlete, looked so athletic, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
Had
that's
great
right.
speed and just just really he looked the part.
He was a put together guy, if I remember what he.
Also
exactly.
Says here he signed the first $1 million contract in the history of professional hockey in 1972. When he left the Blackhawks and the NHL, remember, to join the Winnipeg Jets of the WHA as a player coach back in 72, Pat.
There you go.
I remember that. But anyway, Bobby Hull dead at the age of 84 this morning.
Craig, the Big 12, Big 12 had a pretty good run throughout the weekend with these matchup games, didn't they? OU, goodness sake, boy, they ran Alabama completely out of the arena.
They really did, Pat. 50 in the first half on them. I mean, they led that game, 50-33 at halftime and ended up winning by 24 and actually led by over 30 points, you know, at one time in the second half. So, and this was the number two team in the country. This Alabama team really is a good basketball team. They're well coached. But you know, Nate Oates said it, Pat, and talk about this, like they had won 9 in a row coming in. But Oates said, he goes, the team hadn't been playing that well.
Yeah.
And one of the players was talking about it afterward, Rylan Griffin, and he said, we really didn't listen. We didn't come ready to fight. And you could feel that we just thought we were kind of untouchable, and they found out they weren't.
Well, you know, this was a – oh, what's the kid's name? It dropped 30 on him?
Grant Shurfield.
Yeah. Goodness sakes. I mean, you know, and I'd seen Alabama. I'd watched them play Arkansas, and saw them play somebody else, and, I mean, they're very athletic and get after you and the whole thing. And, you know, what we've seen of OU or what I've seen of OU, I mean, they play hard and they do good things, but sometimes they can't score much. When Schofield started dropping them in, all of a sudden, bam, that's a different deal. Gosh.
Shurfield goes 4 for 5 from 3, and, 11 for 20, 30 points, 6 assists. But OU, Pat, makes 9 out of 13 threes.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, they make 34 out of 59 shots. That's almost 58%, while Alabama, and credit the OU defense, but Alabama shoots under 38% from the field and made only 6 out of 22 threes. That's 27%. Plus, they even missed 8 foul shots. They didn't have it at all. So, easily the best game of the year for OU, and they need it because if they're on the bubble, Pat, at the end, when all is said and done, even if they don't even have a 500 record in conference, the committee can look at this and go, hey, they were good enough to beat the number two team in the country and beat them bad, you know. So this could work in their favor later. But
I mean, obviously Porter Moser came in here, you know, with that Final Four group out of Loyola and all that stuff and that great year. And he's had probably the hottest item in the country. And Castiglione gets him hired. But really, you know, because this is his second year, this would be his signature win, wouldn't it?
100%.
Easily.
Have to be.
Right.
Yes.
You know, and you get into that. That's always interesting to me because if you're going to, you know, for all kind of reasons, you know, now whether Notre Dame tries to hire him or not, you know, you're hearing that out there, and who knows what's going to go on with that deal. You know, you hear, I mean, there's rumblings about, well, it's, oh, you hired the right guy down. Well, of course they have, you know, and all this. But you do something like this, and, you know, be it recruiting purposes, be it for just the prestige of the program, be it for your credibility, I think this is huge, which made me think, and you two are about as good as, not about, you two are as good as anybody around to ask you this. I mean, Craig's seen everything come and go. Matt's younger and everything, but, you know, if you look back through these kind of things, I was just jog playing with some things this morning, and I thought this, I was looking at Coach Fairbanks stuff, Craig. I mean, you can remember this. The ones I put, you know, and I can vaguely remember some of this kind of stuff, to be honest about it. I was just kind of getting in coaching or still in school today. You know, when they beat the number 9 Colorado 23-0 in 67, you know, and which was, again, his first year, they go 10-1. And then when they beat Tennessee in the Orange Bowl, to me, one of those two would probably be, because when I think of signature, I think normally fairly early in your career. Now, you know, it depends on how you judge. You can judge it all kind of different ways. But, you know, normally to get it going, get a guy going early in your career, to me kind of means signature. But Craig, would you?
And that Tennessee team, do you have there where they were ranked, Pat? Because I think they were highly ranked.
Second in the country.
Second. Okay. That's what I – That was my question. Yeah.
OU apparently was third. OU was third, and
they beat them like was two. I think 26-24 was the
That's
final.
What
but,
it is.
But
That's
Carl
exactly
Kremser
what it
had
was.
A remember mm-hmm. that they had a really good kicker, Carl Kremser, yep, and he had a field goal attempt at the end of the game, and he missed it. And no, that was a big win for that program at the time. You're exactly right, Pat. For
well,
Fairbanks.
Well, okay. What would you? What would Switzer? Would Coach Switzer be, Craig? You know, you got the. obviously 73.
We didn't lose a game his first 3 years.
Well, I know it. I know. But you know,
had the one tie against USC. And
yes.
Texas is number 6 versus number 13, and you beat them 52-13.
Yeah.
I mean, you run them out of the stadium.
What year was it? Was it 73, guys, where Nebraska didn't cross the 50?
Was that 74?
Now they beat them 27-0. They beat them 27-0 in 73.
Was that 73 season? That's the one, I think, Matt.
Was that the Lulidoo in 73?
Lulidoo defense, yeah. Lucius Leroy and Dewey.
Played
together only 1 year in 73 season.
If you don't allow Nebraska back then to cross the 50, I would think that would have to rank high. By default, the Orange Bowl, they beat Michigan to win. Of course, that was his second national title. The first one.
That was after the 75 season.
Yeah, right. The 74 year.
They didn't get to go to a bowl game.
They didn't go to a bowl game because they were on probation, but they went 11-0.
They ran the table, obviously. Yes. All that. The two I had were again, the 73 Texas and the 73 Nebraska. One of the two of them would have been.
I tell you what, beating Penn State and Joe Pa in the Orange Bowl to win that 85 national championship, it'd probably have to be one of those Nebraska games, though, Pat, because he had so many dramatic wins over Nebraska, right?
I was going to say, for as long as, successful Coach Switzer was, when I think signature, I'm going to start looking early in the career to see if you had one. That's me.
I got you.
To establish your credibility as a head coach. Obviously 85. All those accomplishments speak for themselves. But that word to me means I start looking early in your career to kind of see what's happened there. And that's just what I look at. But
I got you. But back to Fairbanks, though. I mean, in that Tennessee, you're probably right. Tennessee was probably it early. But then I look at that run in the 71 year where they, lose to Nebraska of the century.
Sure.
They had that run where they beat, USC, Colorado, Texas, whatever, back-to-back-to-back, those three. That was a pretty good three-game run for, run for him in that season.
Well, although you get into Fairbanks.
Because that Colorado team ended up third in the country.
Oh, yeah, third in the country. Really, really.
Yeah, when all was said and done.
Really, really good football.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Now it's time to find out who made the biggest splash in sports this weekend. Brought to you by Aquascape Pools. Call 478-POOL to talk to a pool professional. Aquascape Pools. Outdoor living is their passion. It's who made the biggest splash in sports this weekend on WWLS, the sports animal.
Taking 7 threes, made 6. They've got 8 assists on 15 baskets.
He is good.
And Sherfield is doing whatever he wants. He's got 15.
This kid is a high-volume pull-up jump shooter. Get to the lane, make tough shots, guy.
And that was Carl Ravitch. Jimmy Dykes on Saturday. Aquascape Pools, biggest splash of the weekend. That bucket made it 39-26. Grant Sherfield on his way to 30 points, 4 out of 5 from three-point range in that game. He also had 6 assists. The Sooners get the victory 93-69. Over the Alabama Crimson Tide, Craig Humphreys along with Matt Meyer in studio, joined by Pat Jones from Tulsa. Okay, so Pat, we were talking about signature moments. You got a few more?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would think I was looking at Coach Gundy's, stuff here. Again, I do think, and y'all said, I think that win over Notre Dame here was probably the biggest win in school history. But in, as far as a signature or a tone-setting type of win, I don't know. His second year, in 06, they beat Nebraska bad, and then dropped some ball games. But and I know that that wasn't a very good Alabama team down there. It was Independence Bowl, wasn't it? When they went, Joe Kynes was coaching at Alabama. But I thought when Mike and them, just from a credibility standpoint, because it gets people's attention, when here again, here's second year coach Mike Gundy, you know, beats Alabama in a bowl game. Of course, now the next year too, they go up to Nebraska and just annihilate them 45-14. So I would think it would be either that Nebraska, the Alabama win in the Independence Bowl or beating Nebraska. Now I'm not saying those are the two best teams they've ever beaten, but it's again with what the word signature to me means, setting a tone. You know, just setting a tone for what's going to happen. I was when we got there in 79, you know, the one in Jimmy's signature win, we go up there to Columbia and beat Missouri 14-13. And, you know, and Craig, it's Phil Bradley and Wilder and Ellis all that crowd. I mean, to this day, and we were all beat up and had a backup quarterback and you know, backup running back and the whole deal. And, again, beat them 14-13, and that propelled really us into a 7-win season. Jimmy's a coach of the year, and the rest of that's history. You know, I guess probably when after Jimmy left and I became the head coach, we were lucky in that that first game would really have been the tone setter for all that when we go out there at Arizona State and annihilate them, and they had a ranked team.
45-3, right, Pat?
40, just beat their brains out. You know, and again, somebody had sent me something here the other day, and it was out of a old Washington Post article that, you know, was quoted, you know, Daryl that was out there before, you know, and everything, you know, goodness sakes, it's, you know, said that this was the best team they'd ever played, you know, and talking about Arizona State. And all, so goodness, but that would have been our signature win.
And winning the Gator Bowl that year also. I mean,
yeah, you know, you could have gone that because that was the one that secured the 10th win, you know, and all, and first team to ever win 10 ball games. That would have been that was close. But I will say this: the Arizona State deal, Darryl Rogers, the Arizona State deal, you know, set the tone for all of that. It really did. And you know, I got
Thurman Thomas was a freshman that year, right?
Thomas was a freshman. 84? He was, in that ball game, he was actually the fourth tailback. You know, so we had, you know, we were pretty good at tailback. I mean, Sean Jones had been an all Big A player the year before. The secret weapon was Charlie Crawford from Bristow. You know, and Charlie, school and Charlie didn't set well together. That was a conflict of interest, but he was eligible. Man, and we put him out there about the fourth or fifth series, and he ran wild. Arizona State couldn't tackle him, and then he hurts a knee, and all the rest of that's history. And
Rusty Hilger.
Hilger, the whole thing. That was O'Neill and Rodney Harding and John Washington. Those guys are really weird. That's probably that and the year before that were the two best defensive units they've ever had.
So you're talking about more like a coming out party.
Well, it depends on how how you view it. I think it is as far as setting a tone to me. Yeah. You know, now when it's all said and done, after the fact, you could go back a couple of different ways. But as far as just to set the tone, that's when I think of what and maybe think of the day when Mosier and them drilled Alabama and those kids are rushing the floor. You know, here's Mosier comes in with a very good background. All of a sudden, you know, they're just kind of plodding along here and you know, some good and some not good and just middle of the road. And then all of a sudden, here comes number two, Alabama. And quite honestly, I think most people expected Alabama to blow them out of the water. And here comes OU, you know, and you beat their brains out. So I think overnight it probably changed in a lot of people's thinking, I would think. Guys, that it changed the view of Porter Mosier to
Although
people down here.
You do see this happen a lot in college basketball where, you know, the home court is such an advantage. Like, I think that Alabama was only favored by like five and a half, something like that.
When it was coming in.
So I'm just saying they weren't supposed to blow them out by 20. So my point is, can they back this up, Pat? Because, I mean, you backed it up, and Gundy has backed it up, you know, with – is this OU team good enough to back up this big victory against Alabama with more wins like it? Yeah.
Or does it propel the program? Does it help them in recruiting to get better players? Conversely, you win more
ball
games.
Where do they go from here?
Or if you're sitting up there at Notre Dame, is somebody saying, you realize what old Moses just did down there?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, there's
too.
a lot of factors that get kicked. But as far as just giving, not that he needed credibility, but in certain ways down here, he probably did to a degree. So I think it gave him a ton of credibility. And you're right, so many games in basketball and the whole deal. But, gosh, maybe it's just me because I'd watched Alabama. I'd seen them a couple of times. And, whoa, buddy. And then I'd seen OU a couple of times and all this. And then here they come to Norman, and OU just, I mean, runs them out of the stadium. Runs them out
I'd seen them too, and I did not see this coming, Pat.
Yeah,
because Bama was 18-2 and won 9 in a row coming in, right?
Boy. What about what's going on in Dallas? That's kind of some interesting with the Cowboys. That's a little interesting.
So Kellen Moore will not return. What are your thoughts,
Matt? Did you see that coming, Matt? Talked about it.
I have to
bit.
Say
you
that
talked about it last
it,
week.
It doesn't surprise me because because McCarthy in his press conference last week. When he was asked specifically about Kellen Moore, his response basically was, I'm not going to sit here and detail every single coach. So, to me, if he in his mind knows he's going to keep Kellen Moore, his response at that point would have been, heck yeah, Kellen Moore's my guy. What are we even talking about here? Well, that wasn't his response. He didn't slam him, but you could tell from the way he answered that question last week that something was cooking. Now, so I would say this does not surprise me. Did I see it coming? I mean, yeah, kind of. But, I mean, this does not surprise me is the way I would
answer that. Do you think he's going to call the plays, Matt?
I think that's really interesting. You know, he did that a lot in Green Bay.
He was a guy. And don't you think, doesn't this kind of confirm the fact that it's either do it or you're gone,
And not just Moore, but so many of the other assistants as well.
The whole thing is coming down here.
Because they've lost like 6 or 7 or 8 assistants now.
And Jerry doesn't really want to pull the trigger on McCarthy at this point in time. But if you're McCarthy, you're thinking, hey, if I go out and try to drum up some other guy, I'm going down, I'm going to go down doing it my own self. I hate to say it.
A lot of coaches look at it like that.
Particularly if you're by nature a quarterback guy, play caller.
The interesting thing to me about this is, whatever they choose to do, if he chooses to bring somebody else in or if he chooses to call plays himself, does this signify that he wants to put more of an emphasis on the running game? Because as the year went along, and I know they had injuries in the offensive line, we saw that Elliott doesn't have the burst that he once had, and Tony Pollard got hurt, not just in the 49ers game, but Pollard missed the Tennessee game early in the year. So I understand they had some injuries, but as the year went along, as they got Dak back, you really started to see them kind of get away from the run game a little bit, and I'd still say they need to I think they need to do everything they can to put Prescott in good situations. I'll leave it at that. So he obviously thought that Kellen Moore was not doing everything he could to put Prescott in good situations, I guess.
Too. And again, I think it's kind of, if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down swinging, it's going to be me.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.